It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Hey, there we go. Hello, hello, welcome. Look at that. It is October 16th, 2020, and it's time for News to Me. You've tuned in, you're on and on radio. Of course, if you want to chat live, you can go to com. Just type com at the terminal. Press G for go to. Type in and on radio, all in one word. Hit enter. Boom. You're in the com. You get to talk. It's really fun. Got Zeptar, SMJ in the chat. I'm sure we've got Nicole Augie, joining in. Lots of people. It'll be a good time. There's lots of stuff happening. So check it out. Let's go ahead. Let's do it. Let's do this.
World news.
All right, starting us off, we got China. China is rapidly expanding use of an experimental COVID-19 vaccine, increasing the number of people receiving its experimental vaccines, with a city offering one to the general public and a biotech company providing another free to students going abroad. The city of Jiaxing, south of Shanghai, is offering a vaccine under development by Sinovac. It said in an announcement Thursday, it said high-risk groups, including people who are responsible for the basic operations of the city, will receive priority, but that residents who have emergency needs can also sign up. The vaccine's in the final stage of clinical testing, but has not yet been approved. The city government said it's being provided under an emergency authorization. Pretty wild, huh? But that's what's happening. They got that going on. Another thing to be aware of, Mexico's vowing to purge, or the headline says Mexico vows purge after ex-defense chief arrested in U.S. That's right, Mexico's president on Friday promised to clean up the armed forces but backed its current leadership after the arrest of a former defense minister on drug charges in the U.S. This is coming from Reuters today. The day after the stunning detention in Los Angeles of Salvador Cienfuegos, defense minister from 2012 to 2018, President Andrés Manuel López Obrador pledged to suspend anyone inside his government implicated in the charges. "We won't cover up for anybody," he said, before voicing fulsome support for Cienfuegos' successor at the head of the army and his counterpart in the Navy, noting that he had personally vetted them for honesty. "They are incorruptible," he added at a news conference. Oh, hello, Ratsu. Welcome. Some Mexican officials were privately shocked at the detention of Cienfuegos in Los Angeles Airport, worrying it was an unprecedented U.S. intervention against a symbol of Mexican national security. But López Obrador quickly incorporated the arrest into his narrative that predecessors had presided over a debilitating increase in corruption in Mexico, which for years had been convulsed by often horrific levels of drug gang violence. X1 has joined. Welcome, welcome. Now, here we go. We're going to France 24, and we're heading over to Africa for some news. Now, this takes place in Burkina Faso, which is a country that's landlocked. It's south of Mali, north of Ghana. I had to look it up because, as you know, I'm bad with geography, but I like to try and get better. So, here we go. Jihadists have killed around 20 people in attacks in three villages in northern Burkina Faso, the epicenter of a five-year-old jihadist insurgency, government officials said on Thursday. The attacks took place on Wednesday in the villages of Diminol, Bombafa, and Pete Guerse in Sino province. And we'll put that name in chat because I said it weird. The provisional count of these attacks perpetrated in markets and villages show about 20 victims, as well as wounded and missing persons, he said. Regional Governor Salfo Kabore confirmed the attack in another statement. An area resident told AFP at least 24 people were killed in the attacks. "Wednesday is the day of the weekly market in the area," said the resident, adding the toll could be much higher as many people were still missing. The government condemns the barbaric attacks against the peaceful civilian population, said Dan Ginu. Adding that security forces have been deployed to the villages. Burkina Faso is one of the world's poorest countries, is being battered by jihadist insurgency that's coming in from neighboring Mali in 2015. So this is something going on, ongoing, but now you're a little more informed because I don't see this news reported a lot of other places. So let's go on to something you probably are seeing a lot of, and that's our friends from the UK. This is coming from Reuters. Brexit brinkmanship. Johnson says, prepare for no deal. Cancels trade talks. And not really a big surprise to many. That's my comment. Coming here. Prime Minister Boris Johnson said on Friday it was now time to prepare for a no-trade deal Brexit unless the European Union fundamentally changed course, bluntly telling Brussels that there was no point in talking anymore. A tumultuous no-deal finale to the UK's five-year Brexit crisis would sow chaos through the delicate supply chains that stretch across Britain, the EU, and beyond, just as the economic hit from the coronavirus pandemic worsens. At what was supposed to be the Brexit summit on Thursday, the EU delivered an ultimatum. It said it was concerned by a lack of progress and called on London to yield on key sticking points or see a rupture of ties from the bloc on January 1st. I've concluded that we should get ready for January 1st with arrangements that are more like Australia's based on simple principles of global free trade, Johnson said. With high hearts and complete confidence, we will prepare to embrace the alternative and we will prosper mightily as an independent free trading nation, controlling and setting our own laws. So, good luck to the UK. You're going to need it. Moving over, the story, I originally saw this on The Guardian, but I couldn't get a full story, so I went to the Irish Times. I'm not sure if they have a slant or not, but they seem pretty much like a regular, trustworthy news site. So, here we go. Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel has described the coronavirus pandemic as a challenge to democracy, with thousands of demonstrators opposed to the restrictions expected to march through Berlin on Saturday morning. On Friday, a Berlin court overturned the city-state's government's ban on the gathering, dubbed the Festival of Peace and Freedom, saying it could go ahead with additional rules. The demonstration, a march, through the city, and rally at the Brandenburg Gate is expected to attract more than 20,000 people from across Germany and Europe. A special guest will be Robert Kennedy Jr., son of the assassinated U.S. politician and an anti-vaccine activist. The Kordinken 7-Eleven group, put that in chat, The Kordinken 7-Eleven group, organizer of the march, welcomed the overturning of the ban as a complete success for us. This is a success for the basic rights that we have and for which we don't need authorization. Berlin's Justice Minister, Andreas Geisel, issued the ban after a previous gathering on August 1st saw many demonstrators gather without masks in a city center park. Mr. Geisel's argued that the marchers' opposition to COVID-19 measures created a public health risk, while the likely attendance of extremist groups posed a risk to violence. So this is pretty wild, and this march is expected to attract over 20,000 people. So pretty spooky stuff. Do-do-do-do. Oh, yeah. We're almost halfway done. They are names. I'm hoping I'm coming through. It sounds like I am, but I'm just putting names in here as they go. So let's jump back into Africa for a minute. This is from Reuters again. South African white farmers and black protesters face off over farm murder case. This is from Senekal, South Africa. White South African farmers and black protesters hurled abuse and threats at each other on Friday during a court hearing in a murder case that has exposed still simmering racial tensions 26 years after the end of apartheid. The killing of Brendan Horner, a white man whose body was found tied to a pole at his farm in Free State Province, sparked riots at the start of this month and prompted President Cyril Ramaphosa to make an appeal to the South Africans to resist attempts to mobilize communities along racial lines. Doot, doot, doot. I don't want to be confusing to Calm. I'm throwing names into chat, and it's like, if I'm not going out, I don't want to accidentally be confusing. Anyway, the farmers outside the courthouse in the central town of Senekal accused the government of failing to protect them from violent crime, while their opponents from the economic freedom fighters complained about what they see as the continued domination of South Africa's economy by whites. We're getting tired now of all the farm murders, said Jeffrey Marai, 30, a livestock trader from Delmas, where a woman was strangled to death 2 weeks ago. Enough is enough. They, the government, must start to prioritize these crimes. So, this is going on, and it's an adventure. So, we'll see what's happening. I hope they can find some peace out there. Oh, yeah. All right. Jump up to Pakistan. Supporters of Pakistan opposition parties were converging on a stadium in the city of Gunjwanwala on Friday. On Friday, to begin a countrywide protest campaign to oust Prime Minister Imran Khan, who they accuse of being installed by the military in a rigged 2018 election. Nine major opposition parties formed a joint platform called the Pakistan Democratic Movement last month to begin a nationwide agitation against the government. Khan, who came to power on an anti-graft platform and denies the army helped him win, said on Friday he wasn't afraid of the opposition's campaign, which was aimed at blackmailing him to drop corruption cases against their leaders. "We've come out for the supremacy of the law," said Marian Nawaz, the daughter and political heir of former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif, speaking from atop an SUV that was showered with rose petals as she left for Gunjwanwala from nearby Lahore. "So, our struggle is against injustice, unemployment, and all-time price hikes." Do want to go ahead and take a minute here and mention that the Dubious Goals Committee is coming up in about 20 minutes, a little under 20 minutes from now. And then, since today's Friday, Something Blue with Harry Larry's coming up after that. Both of those shows are really fun, so check it out. Another fun thing I just wanted to mention, because I don't mention these shows enough, but DJ Bronzy Beats on at midnight, or 00 UTC Saturday, so later tonight if you're in the U.S. And tomorrow at 1500 UTC is the Server Room, and so that's a 30-minute show on Saturdays. It's pretty fun if you're into technology at all. And then we've got about 2.5 hours from with the show called Shut Up, You Freak. That's a good one, too. And that's on Sundays. So tune in and check it all out. There's lots of cool shows. You can see the whole schedule at anonradio.net. So let's keep on going. We got just a few more world news.
World news.
Yeah, the world news stories. Oh, yeah. And Gordon Raphael's Silhouette Shack is after Bronzy Beat. I didn't see it on the thing, but I'll throw it in there. let's go get into this here. Thailand has some news. Thai police fired stinging liquid from water cannon at thousands of Thai protesters on Friday in the most violent escalation of 3 months of demonstrations against the government of Prime Minister Prayuth Chan-o-cha, a former junta leader. Protesters defied a government ban on gatherings for a second day, pushed against helmeted police who advanced with batons and riot shields. Youth-led protests have grown into the biggest challenge in years to a political establishment dominated by military figures in the royal palace of King Maha Vajiralongkorn. Zeptar and the Zeptar Show is on Wednesdays at 2000. Oh, did I say it wrong? Oh, I just missed it. Sorry about that, Zeptar. Heck yeah, this is a fun show too. It's definitely worth checking out. Throwing it in my list. Bam. It's on there for later. All right. Zeptar Show. Yep. Ratsu knows what's up. The dictatorial government is using violence to disperse the people's movement, said Tetep Ruangrapatsiri, one of the protest leaders. The king has made no direct comment on the protests, but in comments broadcast on state television, he said Thailand needs people who love the country and love the monarchy. Till now, the police had not used major force to suppress peaceful protests that had drawn tens of thousands of people, although more than 40 demonstrators, including several leaders, have been arrested in the past week. Now, we can jump on over to something that I think is pretty cool, and then we'll play a song. And that's New Jets Promise to Revive Supersonic Travel. This is coming to us from the BBC. People have always wanted to travel fast. Welcome, F. Fuentes. People have always wanted to travel fast, ever since the first person galloped across the plains on horseback, said Mike Bannister. And he should know, Mr. Bannister flew Concorde with British Airways for 22 years. As the airline's senior Concorde captain, he piloted the final commercial flight over London in October 2003, and subsequently the very last flight delivering a Concorde to a Bristol museum. Nearly two decades later, the world is edging closer to again having passenger jets that can fly faster than the speed of sound. This month, Boom Supersonic rolled out its XB-1 supersonic test plane. It's the first civilian supersonic aircraft since the Soviet Union's Tupolev Tu-144 in 1968. The skinny, sharply pointed machine will allow Boom to confirm aspects of the design of its proposed Overture, a much more elegant delta-winged project that echoes Concorde. Overture is intended to carry between 65 and 88 passengers across oceanic routes, sparing human populations the supersonic boom generated by its Mach 2.2 speed. NASA has a more outlandish test aircraft in the wings, the Spindly X-59. This will fly in 2022, chasing the prize of sustained supersonic flight over land. This means finding ways to eliminate or at least mitigate the supersonic boom. Then there's the Ariane, claiming its AS2 design will offer civil supersonic flight by the end of the decade, but with just 8 to 10 passengers, the AS2 is aimed at an entirely new market, that for supersonic business travel. So this is pretty interesting. There's lots of stuff going on, several projects being out there. We've only got about 14 minutes or so before the Dubious Goals Committee and the show comes to an end for the week. I'm here Monday through Friday, so you'll have to wait until Monday to hear me again. Anyway, I've got a song for you that I think is amazing. I really like it. You haven't heard it enough. There's a guy named Blaze Foley. He was an Austin musician, and I don't think he ever had a record, but this is one of his songs. It's called Clay Pigeons, and I really like it.
This is a song called Clay Pigeons. Hi, Mom. I'm going down to the ground station, gonna get a ticket to ride. Gonna find that lady with two or three kids and sit down by her side. Ride till the sun comes up and down around me about two or three times. Smoking cigarettes in the last seat. Try to hide my sorrow from the people I meet and get along with it all. Go down where people say y'all. Sing a song with a friend, change the shape of me, and get back in the game, start playing again. I'm tired of running around looking for answers to questions that I already know. I could build me a castle of memories just to have somewhere to go. Count the days and the nights that it takes to get back in the saddle again. Feed the pigeons some clay. Turn the night into day. Start talking again when I know what to say.
Listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF Public Access Unix System.
All right. Welcome, welcome. This is news to me. We are in the tail end of things. We've got about 11 minutes or so before the end of the show. So let's talk about some domestic news, some stuff going on in the U.S. And a big shout out, hello to Publius, who's in comm, hanging out with everybody. So here we go. First up from routers again. The headline is, second sovereign downgrade wave coming, major nations at risk. So some of the world's top economies could see their credit ratings cut or put on downgrade warnings in the coming months in a second global wave of coronavirus-related revisions. S&P Global's top sovereign analyst has warned. S&P's sovereign group managing director Robert Sifrin Arevalo told Reuters that immense costs of supporting health systems, firms, and workers through the pandemic was fundamentally altering some countries' finances for the worst. The rating agency has also downgraded or cut the outlooks on nearly 60 countries this year, but only relatively few have been higher-rated richer nations. So, there we go. With some, though, piling on 15 to 20 points of debt as a percentage of gross domestic product, amounts that would normally take 4 or 5 years to accumulate, and locked into higher spending for the next 3 to 5 years could be about to change. You're talking about ratings in the EU or in highly developed countries like Japan or UK and this part of the world, the US, that have been able to implement pretty massive fiscal and monetary packages to defend themselves. The main point to see here is, where do we see the trajectory going forward? If we see the trajectory is establishing more of a different structural pattern, then you're going to see some rating movements there. Total 31 countries, almost a quarter of all those S&P rates, currently have negative outlooks on their ratings. So this could be something negative soon. Ooh. Man, it would be so cool. We've got so many cool possible futures. We'll see what happens. So here we go. Next up, we got a ProPublica piece. It's Friday, so I'm going to talk about a little bit longer one here. This is called Inside the Fallout of the CDC, How the World's Greatest Public Health Organization Was Brought to Its Knees by a Virus, the President, and the Capitulation of Its Own Leaders, causing damage that could last much longer than the virus. Oh man, that would be so cool. Go 32 knots in the water. Anyway, let's go through this. At 7:47 a.m. on the Sunday of Memorial Day weekend, Dr. Jay Butler pounded out a grim email to colleagues at the CDC in Atlanta. Butler, then the head of the agency's coronavirus response, and his team had been trying to craft guidance to help Americans return safely to worship amid worries that two of its greatest comforts, the chanting of prayers and singing of hymns, could launch a deadly virus into the air with each breath. The week before, the CDC had published its investigation of an outbreak in Arkansas church that had resulted in four deaths. The agency's scientific journal recently had detailed a superspreader event in which 52 of the 61 singers at a 2.5-hour choir practice developed COVID-19 and two died. Ooh, a dump. Pretty wild. Fun times. Butler, an infectious disease specialist with more than three decades of experience, seemed the ideal person to lead the effort. Trained as one of the CDC's elite disease detectives, he'd helped the FBI investigate anthrax attacks, and he'd led the distribution of vaccines through the H1N1 flu pandemic when demand far outstripped supply. But days earlier, Butler and his team had suddenly found themselves on President Trump's front burner when the president began publicly agitating for churches to reopen. That Thursday, Trump had announced that the CDC would release safety guidelines for them very soon. He accused Democratic governors of disrespecting churches and deemed houses of worship essential services. Butler's team rushed to finalize the guidance for churches, synagogues, and mosques that Trump's aide had shelved in April after battling the CDC over the language. In reviewing a raft of last-minute edits from the White House, Butler's team rejected those that conflicted with CDC research, including a worrisome suggestion to delete a line that urged congregations to consider suspending or at least decreasing the use of choirs. On Friday, Trump's aides called the CDC repeatedly about the guidance, according to emails. "Why is it not up?" they demanded, until it was posted on the CDC website that afternoon. The next day, a furious call came from the office of the vice president. The White House suggestions were not optimal. The CDC's failure, were not optional. The CDC's failure to use them was insubordinate, according to emails at the time. 15 minutes later, one of Butler's deputies had the agency's text replaced with the White House version. The danger of singing wasn't mentioned. Early that Sunday morning, as Americans across the country prepared excitedly to return to House of Worship, Butler, a churchgoer himself, poured his anguish and anger into an email to a few colleagues. "I am very troubled on this Sunday morning that there will be people who will get sick and perhaps die because of what we were forced to do. When the next history of the CDC is written, 2020 will emerge as perhaps the darkest chapter in its 74 years, rivaled only by its involvement in the infamous Tuskegee experiment, in which federal doctors withheld medicine from poor black men with syphilis, then tracked their descent into blindness, insanity, and death." You can read the whole story. It's much, much longer over at ProPublica.org, and it kind of details the descent and destruction of the CDC by the government. And of course, you know, it's not all doom and gloom. I mean, there's other stuff going on. So let's talk about that. C-SPAN has suspended its anchor, Steve Scully, who is to moderate the now-canceled second presidential debate, for falsely claiming that his Twitter account was hacked last week. Scully claimed that the hacking account for a tweet sent from Scully's account asking former White House Communication Director Anthony Scaramucci for advice on how to respond to President Donald Trump recently said he believes Scully is a never-Trumper who worked for Biden at one point. Both C-SPAN and the Commission for Presidential Debates came to Scully's defense. On Thursday, Scully apologized for lying about the hack. The story was covered by outlets across the spectrum, but covered with more prominence by right-rated media. Some voices from the right, including Trump, pointed to Scully's falsehood as evidence that the debate was rigged in Joe Biden's favor and highlighted Scully's history of claiming his Twitter account had been hacked. So, this is sad news. C-SPAN is usually way, way more neutral, so that was kind of a bit of a surprise to everybody around. We're going to trim this up. We're not going to look at so many sad things. Sorry, there's nothing but sad things, unfortunately. My list, looking through it, yeah, it's all kind of sad. let's see. So we skipped a few international stories. Here we go. Here's one. This is from Canada. Inside Canada's decades-long lobster feud, a fight over indigenous fishing rights that's been decades in the making has come to a head in Nova Scotia. In a small warehouse on the southern tip of Nova Scotia near Yarmouth, two indigenous fishermen found themselves trapped with nowhere to go when an angry mob raided the lobster pound where they had stored their catch. Jason Marr, one of the indigenous fishermen stuck inside, said he had moved his lobster there that evening because he'd heard there might be a raid at another location. All was quiet at first, but soon he says he was surrounded by about 200 men. They were pounding on the doors, screaming obscenity, "Give us the lobster," he told the BBC. There were also four non-indigenous men inside with him, who worked at the pound. The crowd cut the power and threw a rock through the window while he called police, he said. "I don't know if they wanted to kill me or whatnot. They said they were going to give us until midnight or they were going to burn us out." Mr. Marr says he saw men urinate on his car and slash his tires. The mayhem ended when police forced him to leave, he says, and watched as the men stormed the pound and took his catch, as well as the others. Whoa, hold on. The mayhem ended when police forced him to leave, he says, and he watched as the men stormed the pound and took his catch. Just a few hours earlier, a similar raid had been carried out at a second location where a car was burned. In both instances, police gathered outside but made no arrest. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police are still investigating. So, pretty intense right there. Oh! Tobe is a funny bunny. Oh, and look at that. Ouroboroso coming in with a hot take on Windows 95. Windows 95 is really kind of like DOS 7, you know? Anyway, this disputes the latest in escalating feud between Mi'kmaq fishermen and non-Indigenous commercial fishermen that began when the Spikenikatik First Nation launched its own fishery in September during the off-season. Non-Indigenous commercial fishermen say the fishery should be shut down, while Indigenous fishermen say it's their constitutional right. The discord goes back over 250 years to the Peace and Friendship Treaty of 1752, which promised the Mi'kmaq the right to hunt and fish their lands and establish trade. For centuries, the treaty and others like it were ignored, but in 1999, the Supreme Court of Canada issued a landmark ruling making it clear that the Mi'kmaq and Maliseet people had the right to not just sustain themselves by hunting and fishing, but to earn a moderate livelihood, even in the off-season. The court defined a moderate livelihood as a living that provided for necessities like food and shelter, but not the accumulation of wealth. What that means, practically, was never addressed in the regulations, leaving a gray area that is yet to be resolved to this day. So, yeah, it's very troubling here that the police showed up and kicked the people out of their warehouse and then watched as the people were robbed. The Native Indigenous people of Canada and the U.S., I mean, they're actively abused and treated poorly by the country, so very sad. Sad indeed. But that's about all we've got time for. I mean, this has been news to me. I appreciate you guys tuning in. We'll be back next week. I'm here Monday through Friday. Tobe will be coming up. And just check out anonradio.net. There's a whole bunch of cool shows going on. And yeah, I guess the only other thing to say is enjoy your tea. I've got a nice black tea today.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.
Yeah, I'll be back on Monday. We've got about 8 seconds or so. So I'll just go ahead and... Bye.